This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Tuesday. Gary, don't ask me what he said.
Oh, you mean, okay, yeah, I got it here. You ready?
All right.
This is when the president was asked a question about reconciliation.
All right.
No.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
Must it be a reconciliation?
What must be what?
Now, that has, we'll let's play it again, all right?
Just all right.
Over.
Must it be a reconciliation?
What must be what?
Now, that was examined on social media yesterday.
It's either my butt's been wiped or my butt's been wet.
Yes, it's
either one is not the proper answer when asked about reconciliation.
All right, let's hear it one more time. I've listened to this because it's just been pounded on social media like crazy.
Yeah.
People
yeah,
slowing
day.
It down.
Yeah.
My bad, bad
yeah.
wipe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like what? Here we go. One more time.
All right.
Must it be a reconciliation?
What must be what?
I mean, he just blurted it out. It's.
Yeah.
Has anybody. Now, I was checking around. I didn't see it, but did anybody ask that question at the White House press briefing? Did the president say his butt's been wiped? We're not really sure in that response to reconciliation.
Right. Yeah, we don't really even know if he understood the question.
You're right.
I'm not sure.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Mm.
From yesterday.
What?
Jackson may be right.
Well, no, Ronnie we said during the pre-show meeting a few minutes ago, because we said that Ronnie Jackson, the congressman from Texas, he said over the weekend that he believes that Biden will resign at some point. And if you don't know, Ronnie Jackson for years was the White House doctor. And so he was doing something that I don't necessarily appreciate, even with experience as a White House doctor. If you haven't examined this individual and you're not free to speak about it, then let's not speculate as to what's going on. I think we can all do that and say, all right, something's not right, but he's a doctor and it takes on a different tone when you do that. But he's basically talking about his mental acuity. Well, last night you and I said, well, look, he's not going to resign. After Monday, Ronnie Jackson could be right. It may be necessary before the end of the summer.
Yeah.
It may be necessary before they even get to talking about, in a serious tone, reconciliation. Oddly enough. Yeah. I don't know. I really, really don't know.
Well, that's one thing that came out yesterday. More Democrats coming out for full amnesty.
Yeah.
By the way, how does amnesty get through on reconciliation?
Well, because everything is infrastructure, and then from there, reconciliation. It's part of the human infrastructure.
Okay.
We're building a bridge to other nations.
Well, how is that spending... As long as they, how can you officially in a, because this would be a spending bill,
mm-hmm.
put something in there that's not spending unless, because you're going to spend hundreds of billions of dollars on illegal immigrants coming into the country and taking care of them,
uh-huh.
is that then considered spending? But if you... decide to budget that. That's one thing. To change the law and give amnesty in a budget bill would be something else, would it not?
Well, here's what's going to happen. The CDC tomorrow will recommend that the kids not go back to school because of the Delta variant. Therefore, the Department of Homeland Security is going to recommend that with amnesty and illegal immigration, which will become legal immigration, that we convert all of the public schools to housing. And that will cost some money, and there you go.
You know, what really is interesting these days? Mm. You and I can come up with the most bizarre analogies with the intent of trying to be humorous.
And tomorrow, Jen Psaki will talk about it.
Yeah.
they'll float the idea. Well,
yeah.
One thing they're thinking about is because of the Delta variant, kids won't be back in schools this fall, and we'll just convert all of the public schools to housing for immigrants.
Oh, by the way, there's just so much out there with the White House saying the travel restrictions will apply.
Mm-hmm.
I must read my tweet from yesterday responding to that.
Yeah.
So the xenophobic travel restrictions continue unless you have COVID and cross the southern border illegally.
Ah.
You know, that really hasn't, well, it might have been talked about. We haven't really focused on that yet. But with now you see that you have different, you know, you have the federal government hinting for, you know, more mandates. You have states now, mm-hmm. and cities saying for their city workers, more mandates out there. You have the left talking about the fact that people that are unvaccinated are everything from, I don't know, treasonous to non-caring. Yet we know that the Biden administration is allowing people and has allowed people into this country illegally. Illegally, because I believe that the executive orders are wrong when they do that. I do believe they're unconstitutional. I don't believe that you can change, you know, the law and just say, okay, you can come in now, and you go temporarily, you can come in and just disappear,
mm-hmm.
because they're trying to do an end around on this. Obviously, they are, but. As we know, people are coming into this country illegally and because of Biden's orders that have COVID. And there is no concern from Democrats about that at all. Zero. As they lecture Americans who are unvaccinated that they are not responsible, they are evil. It is the Democratic Party that is supporting the insane crisis at the border, which is allowing people into this country that have COVID.
Hmm.
Not a word from the left. Not a word.
No. They're screaming about the Delta variant, but at the border, apparently it doesn't exist. You know what? We just discovered the cure for the Delta variant. Crossing the southern border illegally. Call the pharmacy companies. Apparently, that's the cure. It doesn't exist if you cross the southern border into the U.S. illegally.
The Delta variant disappears if you cross the southern border illegally. It does not exist. Ask any Democrat. It does not exist as long as you cross the border illegally.
It's the cure.
You're the disease, I'm the cure.
Oh, absolutely.
It's, by the way, 12:14 a.m. on July 27th.
We're doing
That's Central Time. Eric Harley, Gary McNamara discovered the cure for the Delta variant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everybody write that down. We're right on that. If you're on the left, prove me wrong.
Yeah. Huh.
Tell me, because apparently it's true. There is no concern whatsoever for the Delta variant when it comes to the border.
Nope, none. Zero. Thousands upon thousands of people coming in to this country.
Wasn't Fauci back in May asked about illegals coming over and them not being checked, and he said that really wasn't his job.
Not my job.
By the way, I'm saying that because there was a guy I used to work with at the steel plant that always said, hey, could you do that?
Not my job.
Yeah. Not my job.
Yeah.
My butt's been white.
So, he's head of an organization that discovers, but also guides these diseases and the management of these diseases and illnesses, unless it's people coming here from another nation. So, yeah. All right. Okay. No guidance there. Is there CDC guidance on illegal immigrants coming into the U.S.?
No, I don't believe so.
There isn't.
No.
I mean, they're here.
Not that I've heard of.
Well, the thing would be is that they're here. We're not going to give guidance if they're not here. If they're on the other side of the border, the guidance doesn't make any sense. But they're here, and they're the CDC. Huh. Amazing how that works or doesn't.
Coming up on the show, a lot of talk yesterday about American pessimism because of the study or the polling that was done. Andrew Cuomo lies about not lying. Lori Lightfoot puts out the message that she defends being a racist. Social justice group tells wealthy white liberals, give up your spots at Ivy League schools. Schumer calls Trump a racist, pounds on the people that voted for him. His supporters, but that's always a great thing whenever a Democrat calls Trump a racist, because then we can, by the Democrat standard, judge Joe Biden. And by the Democrat standard of what racism is, then there is no more racist than Joe Biden. Thank you, Chuck Schumer, for giving us the opportunity on the show again to talk about the number one thing that proves to Democrats that Donald Trump is a racist, mm-hmm. where they had to lie last fall. And we can go through and look at Joe Biden's relationships with a former KKK member, Robert Byrd. Mm-hmm. We can go back to all of the racist statements that he has made. And we can go to the current day Democratic Party that believes in identity politics, critical race theory, and Biden himself, who lies about voter integrity laws and lies and compares them to Jim Crow laws in order to instill racial divisiveness. Democrats and Schumer, we can do this all day. Thank you for the opportunity, Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer, a supporter of identity politics, for years, judging people by groups and not individuals, dare to call somebody else a racist.
Yeah.
Who embraces and is the leader of the party of identity politics, critical race theory, and lying about election laws in order to instill racial divisiveness by lying, which is what racist hate group leaders do. Democrats, bring it on. The COVID mandates, homeschooling increases across the United States. Democrat mayors hire private security while defunding police. That was an article in Forbes yesterday, and a whole bunch more. Your calls and comments here. Got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, what I was talking about is the story that a second House Democrat is vowing to oppose a budget which would need to be passed through the reconciliation process that excludes amnesty for illegal immigrants. Representative Lou Correa of California said this week he will not support a budget via reconciliation which would need only 51 votes in the Senate, unless it includes providing amnesty to millions of illegal immigrants living in the United States. Quote, a balanced and fiscally sound budget reconciliation deal must include a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Korea said in a statement, I will not support any budget reconciliation deal that continues to leave hardworking undocumented taxpayers in limbo. That would be my question, because I haven't been able to see anybody that's commented on that. How do you get that through reconciliation when that actually is not a budget matter?
Right.
So you can you look at the Senate parliamentarian, and I don't know how they would read something like this, because you could just load a budget bill, call it a budget bill, and put anything you want in there. If Congress changes immigration law, that's got nothing to do with spending.
Right.
Because you can still say we're going to spend for it. You could still say if Congress wants to say we are going to spend $1 trillion on funding illegal immigrants in this country, that they can do. Under reconciliation, from what I know, to sit there and say, okay, we're going to change immigration law, that in itself has nothing to do with the budget or spending.
Right. You can fund existing law. Creating or changing law, you can't do that through reconciliation.
And they write here, this is in Breitbart, should Democrats put an amnesty into a budget via reconciliation, it will be up to the Senate parliamentarian to decide whether amnesty could be passed with only majority support in the Senate and without the threat of a filibuster. I can't see that. Because if that's the case, then it's meaningless.
Yeah.
All the rules are meaningless in reconciliation if you can do that. Because then you can just call anything a budget law.
Because it requires funding, it's a budget. It's part
of
the budget.
Right. So you could just you could just do whatever you want way outside the parameters of budget, budget spending or taxing.
Right.
Which you can do under reconciliation. So again, I haven't seen any analysis on it, any legal analysis on it, but I would just guess that you can't do that.
Yeah.
And I've just noticed that in the last week, it's really come up, well, we need to consider amnesty. We need to consider amnesty in here. Now, there's only two people in the House that have said they want that, but when the left gets a hold of that and the squad gets a hold of that and AOC gets a hold of that, they're going to try to make waves on that.
Oh,
because
sure.
if they believe they could get it through, that would be the biggest coup in the world. That's bigger than spending far left.
Oh, yeah. If they were able to get that, then, honestly, what couldn't they do through reconciliation if this were to pass, if this were allowed? They could change a number of laws. Through reconciliation.
Yeah.
Here's your forecast.
We let you know yesterday about a tropical disturbance off the coast of Florida. That system is now moving onshore just north of the border between Georgia and Florida. Locally heavy rainfall remains possible through the day. That's where we'll find most of the thunderstorm activity and potential severe weather today. From Louisiana to Florida, Gulf moisture and daytime heating will be the primary driver of the thunderstorms there. The central and northern plains will be dry. We have some scattered showers for central Texas. Monsoonal flow from New Mexico and Arizona continue northward into Salt Lake City once again. For the most part today, we'll see sunny skies from the mid-Atlantic right on through the Great Plains and into the Pacific Northwest. Triple-digit temperatures remain for those areas that have been experiencing the excessive heat. On Monday, Tampa, Florida hit a high of 99 degrees, matching their all-time record. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
by windmills and solar panels. Red Eye Radio.
And hot air. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Get our app, put it on your phone, and you can listen when you want because we podcast our show. Our show is our podcast.
It is. Neat?
It combines everything.
That's
podcast,
right.
Podcast, show, we do it all in one.
Yep.
You know, and the thing is, people have asked, you know, why don't you do a separate podcast? We do 5 hours!
Well,
by the way, did that sound angry?
Little insight here. Yeah, I did. Little insight here. still not as weird as what the president did, or, you know, yesterday, but did sound a little angry. We do a 3-hour show, and then we do a 2-hour podcast that is identical formatically to our show. So there. That's why.
Don't pay attention to him. We do 5 hours on the air, and that's our podcast.
Well, a lot of stations air that 2-hour podcast as well. So it's also a radio program.
All right. So there was that story out yesterday of Minnesota students at that one school district that were told to hide the equity survey questions from their parents.
Right.
Let me just play. I've got it here. Okay. Do I have it? Yeah, I got it. Okay, I've got it here. This is a Minnesota fourth grade student, and her mother expressed concern to their local school board after her class was given an equity survey. Also, you know, that, as we know, that includes critical race theory. And students were told not to tell their parents about the activity.
Right.
This is Haley Yaskar, a student at Riverview Intermediate School in a St. Cloud suburb, told the local school board during the July 19th meeting that she was very confused about the survey. She was on Fox News and had this to say.
So when I was in the survey, I was taking a few questions, and on the gender identification question, I got very confused and kind of nervous after a boy asked his mom, after the teacher explained it, that we could not tell our parents anything. That just made me very nervous and uncomfortable.
Yeah, has your mom ever told you never to, you know, when anyone, an adult especially, says don't tell mom, that's probably not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet she did tell you that.
There you go. And it's interesting because you have Politico, not at all a conservative media outlet. I had an article, and this is from yesterday. Okay. People are scared. Democrats lose ground on school equity plans. Moderate and suburban voters share concerns about education changes and say national Democrats dismiss their arguments, which they do.
Yeah.
Alina Kaplan is the kind of suburban mom who made Joe Biden president. Just read you a couple of paragraphs here. An immigrant who came to the United States from the Soviet Union. She is a registered Democrat from San Mateo County in California, and she's alarmed over her state's new model ethnic studies curriculum, which cites critical race theory as a key framework. Quote, I firmly believe that if the vast majority of Californians and Americans knew about this and about the content of this type of curriculum, this would not be happening. We would not be having this conversation. Kaplan, who has launched an email list, set up meetings with state legislators and recruited people to meet with their school boards to discuss ethnic studies, is representative of Democrat-leaning or politically moderate suburbanites interviewed by Politico in 6 states. All but one of which were won by Biden. They are up in arms over their school system's new equity initiatives, which they argue are costly and divisive, encouraging students to group themselves by race and take pro-activist stances. Proponents of the initiatives say that they are a long overdue step towards getting rid of systemic racism in the school system by creating racism. On the national level, Democrats have insisted that the brush fires over critical race theory, which have become a political punching bag, even for unrelated equity initiatives, are largely the work of right-wing activists who willfully misrepresent what it means, and they blame Fox News for fanning parents' anger. That's another right-wing conspiracy. This is totally made up by Donald Trump and Republican candidate for governor Greg Youngkin, Virginia gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe said in June, which, of course, we called him on it. Terry McAuliffe is a liar on that, as we all know. I don't think that we would think that educating the youth and next and future leaders of the country on systemic racism is indoctrination, said White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki in May. But those Democrats appear to be underestimating parents' anger in places where critical race theory is top of mind. And remember, they're talking about Democrats here.
Right.
They're talking about Democrats being upset about it. Objections to new equity plans are not the sole province of conservatives, but extend to many moderate and independent voters, according to Politico interviews with school board members, political operatives, and activists in Democrat and left-leaning communities, including the Northern California suburbs of Washington, D.C., Palm Beach County, Florida, New York's Westchester County, Maricopa County covering Phoenix, and suburban Detroit. Parents who are showing up to school board meetings and have helped launch a spate of recall elections say they are angry about a host of issues, including what they see as a myopic focus on diversity at school boards, ongoing frustration over a year of closed schools, and school lesson plans that they say are becoming too progressive too fast. Coming from Democrats. And this article written by a liberal publication. While those complaints have often been branded in the media as anti-critical race theory, the causes of anger are varied and are being ignored, parents say. These stakes aren't lost on Amanda Lippman, founder of the Democratic organization Run for Something, which works to elect school board members and other local officials. This is a perfect storm of something that it can appeal to or draw back in some of the suburban parents that might have voted Republican in 2016, Democrat in 2018 and 2020, but could be drawn back to the Republican Party in 2022. Yeah, because you're a bunch of racists and bigots. That's why. Let's be blunt about it.
Well, you don't want this, you know, this whole idea of it's rolling out way too far, too fast. Wait a minute. This is exactly where it was going.
Right.
Did anybody speak up against Obama when he said that race is a social construct? And also when he said that, sorry, racism is part of your DNA. You can't do anything about it.
Nope. They said nothing. We did.
We did.
We did. Littman says, we try to argue, no, you're misdefining critical race theory, and that's not the point. The point is that people are scared about what their kids are learning. Right, you're teaching them to be racist.
Yeah. Send kids home with that kind of judgment. Send kids home judging where they have learned to judge by skin color.
Yes.
And see what parents do.
Tell them that their sex can be changed based on their will, because that's also part of equity.
Right, right. And see, here's the thing, is that the agenda in the past on, you know, identity politics and judging people by skin color has been one thing. But we've said for the longest time, you step outside the bubble and what do you have? People don't live that way in their own life. Most of us go about our day and we're not judging by skin color. We're not. In a society, in our society, we get along for the most part. And we're not judging by skin color. And so what happened was this abstract idea of, well, we need to recognize this group or that group or this group or that group. And we need to make sure we focus on that and judge. And people could go, okay, they would nod their head. And when they got home, they would roll their eyes and say, okay, that's crazy. We're not going to do that. And they didn't teach that to their children, and neither are you.
People who identified as Republican and heard of critical race theory were especially negative. 85% termed their views very unfavorable, but the same was true for 71% of independents, a group that is key to Biden's victory, favoring the Democrats by 9 points in the election, they say, according to Pew Research Center. Among Democrats who had heard of critical race theory, most, 58%, were very favorable. Well, as we have said before, that's because it's the party of racists.
Yeah,
they judge people by groups.
Yep.
Identity politics has taken a hold of a significant portion. I don't believe all voters, not as many that it's in the party. I do believe also that a part of that group really doesn't know what's in critical race theory. I can guarantee you they don't know what's in it. They don't know what's being taught in the schools today. Wait till their child comes home and says, Mommy and Daddy, I'm a racist.
Yeah.
Or you're a racist, or you're
right.
And you know, you're bigoted and you can never get rid of it. And wait till that starts happening.
Well, because your child will be the judge at that point. We'll start in judgment, and somebody else is teaching them and leading them in values that you are not going to adhere to. That is going to set parents, and it already has, on fire.
One parent in Michigan, a diverse suburb outside of Detroit with prized public schools, said she started reading up on critical race theory after her daughter, a recent high school graduate, started raising the idea of defunding police departments and arguing that rioters who looted stores during 2020's Black Lives Matter protest were justified. The parent, who asked not to be named because of the heated politics in the district, said she has in the past voted for Democrats, but she considers her daughter's ideas radical. She and other parents formed an anonymous group to question the school board because of the wall of intimidation that exists in the Democratic Party. Based on everything I've seen in the last year, starting with COVID, I cannot continue voting for Democrat candidates in good faith. We'll get back to what we talked about yesterday, the pessimism that has just moved wildly in the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And I asked a question yesterday. Is this, you know, you and I had this discussion. Is it because of critical race theory? We said, what changed from May until now? What was the big issue that changed? Maybe inflation, but really it was critical race theory. And if that's being taught to your kids in school and you're coming home and you're saying, what? What's going on? And everything after last year. And you realize your kids are being taught this in school. That's something that will hit you head on where you say, my God, we're going in the wrong direction because they're teaching my kids to be a racist.
Oh, yeah. You again, you start teaching those kind of values. Those are this is, again, what the left thinks this is a positive. This is racism. You're teaching kids to be racist, to judge by skin color, and sending them home to their parents. And you think you won't meet a resistance? You're wrong.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to some of your calls and comments coming up on the top of the hour. We've only got about a minute here. Some interesting calls we have on that political article and the young girl from Minnesota who was said in the equity test given to kids, they were told, don't tell your parents what the questions are. You and I talked about this, Eric, and said it was only a couple of school districts that this all hit on.
Right.
You know, by the time we got to June,
mm-hmm.
and September's coming, these school districts are not giving up
on
critical race theory
No.
and on the liberal transgender activist movement. Mm-hmm. They're not giving up on this at all.
No.
and expect this thing to just blow to pieces come September and October when school's back in session again and this, you know, starts being taught. Because even Loudoun, Virginia, from what I know, their school board's not backing off.
No, I mean, here's the thing. The left is doubling down, but imagine when more and more parents, here's the effect, right? The first week or two of schools, of school opening, if you're a parent, it's the kids bringing home documents. You got to sign all the, you know, the dress code and blah, blah, blah. And this is, so you got to sign a bunch of documents. And so this, it's very involved. And then, of course, you're wondering, all right, what are they learning in their new classes and everything else? And the kids, they don't hold back. They'll come back and they'll tell you, especially on something like this. You're going to hear that at the dinner table. That's going to set more and more parents off throughout the fall.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Welcome. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream live. Get our app, put it on your phone, and you can listen to our show whenever you want because we podcast our show. We make it convenient for you. Talking about critical race theory, the equity lessons that are being taught in schools, and the Minnesota student who complained to the school board and said, we were told questions on this particular test we weren't supposed to tell our parents about. And then Politico doing the entire article yesterday, huge article about the fact that, no, this isn't just Republicans making something up, as the Democrats have lied about it. Terry McAuliffe did it a couple of weeks ago, and we called him on it, where, oh, this is just something that's made up by Republicans. The story was about Democrats worried about this, and Democratic parents worried about it, and Democrats understanding that, no, this isn't about that Republicans misrepresenting something. This is something that is being taught at that level in the schools, and Democrat parents object to it, along with many Democratic-leaning independents in many school districts, and this could severely harm Democrats. We talked about the fact that the pessimism in this country has increased drastically in just the last 2 months. I believe that may be a part of it. We'll get into that here in just a little bit. But here's another article from Associated Press. Homeschooling surges across the United States. More parents are homeschooling their children, even as schools have been planning to reopen with in-person instruction since the pandemic, Associated Press reported on Monday. According to the report, despite the varied reasons parents give for choosing regularly homeschool their children, the common denominator is that school closures during the pandemic presented them with the opportunity to try it out, and they discovered it was beneficial to their children. That's one of the silver linings of the pandemic. I don't think we would have chosen to homeschool otherwise. They talked to one woman from Vermont whose 7-year-old daughter has a curriculum that includes literature, our archaeology, and supplemented by outdoor fossil searches. Associated Press cites data from the U.S. Census Bureau, which Breitbart News reported in early April, and that found that 11.1% of kindergarten through 12 students in the nation are now homeschooling. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, I went, oh, it surges. Yeah, what's going to be a couple of hundred thousand? 11.1%.
Yeah, I think there's a number of reasons for a lot of parents who might now be telecommuting, and it depends on the person, the individual, but it is it's better for them if their kids are right there and they can balance work and their kids' homeschooling at the same time. I actually know a few people that are doing that and have decided to homeschool their kids permanently.
That was a jump from 5.4% who began homeschooling when schools closed in the beginning of the pandemic, and from 3.3% who homeschooled prior to the pandemic.
Right, right.
A particular note in the Census Bureau data is that homeschooling rates are surging among black families, in which a proportion of homeschooling increased from 3.3% in spring of 2020 to 16.1% in the fall of 2020. The global pandemic has sparked new interest in homeschooling, and the appeal of alternative school arrangements has suddenly exploded, said the representatives of the Census Bureau, which gathered data for an experimental Household Plus survey that measured the social and economic impacts of the coronavirus pandemic. The Census Bureau clarified the survey distinguished from households that were reporting true homeschooling rather than virtual learning through a public or private school.
Right.
So these are parents that are actually doing the teaching.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work. I have a family member who's been doing it for many years, and is she's going to retire here in 2 years from being a homeschool teacher. She actually helps neighbors. They live in a rural area. And she helps neighbors with homeschooling as well. And so they kind of, the neighbors kind of, it's almost like carpooling. It's a school pooling, where they help each other with, curriculum items and everything else in order to get everything done. And also the kids, still have that social aspect of being able to, and they go out once a day when the weather is good and they can play. They go out for about an hour at a time. Maybe less during the summer heat, they are, those kids are very happy and very, very smart. I mean, it depends on the parent. It really does. It depends on the individual and what type of work you have. If you are stay at home or you have a job that allows you to full-time telecommute, and those are growing in numbers right now, then it can be an opportunity for parents. So I think more and more, though, I think parents, and I would love to see a survey of these parents that are that have chosen this to actually homeschool, real homeschooling. I would love to see a survey as to why.
And I would love to see what they think now that critical race theory has exploded, in the school board meetings. The liberal transgender activist movement has exploded. I wonder what these parents who have decided to homeschool, if that's going to change their mind when it comes to this fall of stating, well, okay, maybe we should continue homeschooling.
Right, yeah.
Even though it's very tough because we don't want to. I can guarantee you parents that take that kind of interest and dedication in their children are not going to be happy with the liberal agenda in schools. They're just not.
No.
Let's go to Debbie in Arkansas. Debbie, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I want to make a comment about the group that was formed anonymously to fight against the CRT in the public school system. One of the things that I see as a problem is we're on the defense with these Marxist organizations. And what's happening is if they can change what our children believe, then they can change what our children's values will grow up to be. This isn't about racism. This is about disintegrating the family. We're talking about young children, particularly when if they're young, they believe everything that their teachers tell them. But when they're teenagers, they haven't formed their life decisions yet. And so if the school district can convince these children that they are racist, that their families are racist, that this country has a history of racism, we've lost that generation. Our parents have to organize, not anonymously, they need to organize locally, publicly. I formed a nonprofit to advocate for students with disabilities way back in 2001, and I can tell you, I traveled all around the country, I trained myself, I was in advocacy trainings. I was able to sit in on attorney training. What's happening in our public school system, even back in 2001, the dismissiveness of the bureaucratic, our elected board members, the superintendents, even our teachers, the dismissiveness toward these parents is incredible. And that's what's happening here with CRT. They're dismissing the parents and their right to raise their children in the manner that they see fit. They want to deconstruct the family. That this has been going on for a long, long time, but I think parents, they need to organize publicly. They need to petition, as they did in California, and continue to do so, to recall Governor Gavin Newsom. Parents need to do that in their communities. If they're shut down on Facebook or any other public media platform, then they need to go become those foot soldiers and put papers, make those little posters and those handouts. Put them in people's doorways. Let people know what's happening. Schedule meetings with locations, places, what the topic is going to be. They need to be very public about this and make it known that they are going to recall these elected board members and school superintendents. And we need to also go on the offense with the cancel culture. Parents can't be afraid that they're going to lose their job. They need to make teachers concerned that they're going to lose their job. Because I think that there are more conservative parents out there than there are liberal parents, or not just liberals, but leftist parents. We need to make this clear that we're not afraid. We're going to stand up. We're going to unite. I understand the fear. When I was advocating, they would sometimes bring in 15 people from the school district, teachers, principals, guidance counselors, deans of students, staffing specialists, to stop me. So they're going to do whatever they can to stop us. But I never, after several years, about 8-9 years of advocating, only one student who I did not get everything I wanted for that child. And that child, the parents allowed him to sign himself out and drop out of school at 16. But if you persist, if you know what you're talking about, if you're on the offense, we can make this happen. We have to stop fearing what's happening on the left. We have to stop being defensive with being called racist, bigots, xenophobes, homophobes, whatever the phobia is that we're accused of, and become loud and organized.
Oh, I agree completely. Yeah. And you've covered a lot of ground that we'll address coming up next. Thank you so much for your call. The number one thing is, so don't back off. Don't back. You know, look, we're talk show hosts, and maybe people say, well, it's easy for you guys because you've done it all the time. I remember when I first became a talk show host, there was that fear. There mm-hmm. isn't anymore. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing is, and it's really important, Debbie, to understand, is the fact that they will use the labels, but you can simply explain to anybody out there. You're not going to look, the ideologue on the left, you're not going to be able to convince, but there's a ton of people, as you said, that are conservative or independent, but wish to teach their kids how you teach your kids about how they should operate their life might even be different than you voting Democrat, as some of the Democrats said there, but you've got to be willing to go public on it. And she was addressing that one Democrat woman who formed an anonymous group. Because they're afraid. They know the wall of, they're Democrats, they know the wall of intimidation.
Yeah, as a conservative, you know, it is a lot easier to say, look, we're not going to back down, we're not going to be intimidated. But liberals right now are very afraid. If you're on the left,
yep.
If you're a Democrat and you've been, again, facing this intimidation, that's how they work. Because, well, you're part of them, and if you're not going to step in line, they're going to get you in line. And that is really intimidating, especially if you're trying to get things done as a parent. And I share some of the experience that Debbie has as a parent and foster parent of special needs children for years. There was a tone there that at times was more about changing what I'm doing at home. And it only came from a handful of people where I found the greatest advocates and administrators and teachers were the parents that, or the teachers that were also parents of special needs children, and I was very fortunate in my school system. So we didn't, I didn't have a lot of the problems to the point that I felt I needed to form an organization. But nonetheless, I was, of course, very vocal at meetings because you have to be. And it's very time consuming, but it is, I think, well worth the effort. If you're not going to fight for your children, who would you fight for?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on defensive driving. Tire blowout. Tire blowouts happen quickly, so your reaction time also needs to be quick. That's why it's important to be prepared. When a tire blowout happens, your instincts may be to hit the brakes. In fact, you want to add power to keep your vehicle stable instead. Hitting the brakes will cause your vehicle to move towards the side of your blown tire. Adding power gives you more control of your vehicle to avoid any further damages. Once you have directional control, slowly reduce your speed and carefully approach the side of the road. After you're safely pulled over, then it's time to follow the necessary safety procedures to address your disabled vehicle. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Debbie brought up, from Arkansas, brought up so many, you know, great points that, you know, we can address. Number one, where, you know, she talked about the fact that, because we had mentioned the woman in the political article who was a Democrat from a suburb of in Detroit, who said, you know, they formed an anonymous group because they're afraid. They're mm-hmm. afraid that, you know, that. And when you think about last year, because I think which everybody needs to understand that if you do this for a living, and Debbie, you seem like you're somebody who has in the past, you've protested, so you've done it before. I mean, you've been out there, you've been in the gutter of political ideas, mm-hmm. and so you know you're used to it in a way. What happened last year with Black Lives Matter and the riots and the wall of intimidation? You have Democrats that are scared to death. Absolutely scared. You had corporations. Think about this. You had corporations, major corporations that succumbed to the racist Marxist ideas of Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
They just felt, you saw what sports leagues did. They were afraid to move. Human resources departments of major corporations didn't know what to do.
The city council member that said, I had to vote to fire the top law enforcement official because if I didn't, I was afraid that the riots would come to my door, that these people would come after me and my family.
Exactly. So understand the wall of intimidation and at times the fear of violence coming to your door that Democrats have. Mm-hmm. So, no, I would agree that, you know, I'm not saying that a Democrat group doing it anonymously doesn't help, but eventually people are going to have to go public. People have to go public. But the most important thing is they can't win on the substance of the argument. The reason that Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, the reason that's Jen Psaki, the reason that the Biden administration will continually say, oh, this is just something that's made up by Republicans, when the Politico article that we read to you earlier is proof that Democrats know that they have a problem and it's not made up by Republicans, is because Terry McAuliffe cannot argue in Virginia. He can't argue what they're trying to argue. He can't win the argument. Understand they're teaching racism. Understand they're not teaching science when it comes to the liberal transgender activist movement, you know, in this country. Their arguments can be easily defeated. That's why they use the wall of intimidation and threats, because they can't win the argument in the arena of ideas. It's that simple.
Yep. And this is something, again, that goes to the basic core of who we are. We've been saying for years that, you know, the far left shouting, you know, that everything is racist. Of course, that's not true. And so parents, again, and a lot of them, and it's now here's further proof, feel intimidated. But when they go home, they know that those individuals shouting racism at every turn are off the charts. And they don't think that way. Those parents don't think that way.
Silence is violence. We're doing our part. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, so a great call that we had there earlier. I think, the only thing is to not, of course, you've got to fight it, but understand the wall of intimidation that existed a year ago.
Mm.
Understand.
Yeah, it's very real.
I mean, it was real. It was the most, you know, you and I often talk about it. It was the most intimidating, the biggest wall of intimidation I have ever seen come from the left. And that was really the whole Black Lives Matter thing last year, which, again, they have shown themselves as to what they actually are. The last thing was their whole statement on Cuba. It showed they really don't care about Black people. They don't care about Black lives. They care about their Marxist agenda. And so they've been exposed. Corporations have backed off. Sports leagues have backed off. They're still not where I want them to be, but they have backed off some, as we've seen, for example, with the NBA. Who really this year sort of threw politics out the window. As the commissioner said, what, a year ago? Okay, the whole Black Lives Matter thing, we're not going to have the
right.
Black Lives Matter on the floor because we've moved on. They moved on because it hurt them.
Yeah, they knew that because if it were benefiting them, if they saw that this was something they should keep doing based on the fan base and based on the feedback that they were getting, then it would be clear. That would be a no-brainer.
Right. So it hurt them, but it was the strongest intimidation, and I do think a lot of people don't want to get involved in it. They have their opinions, and they're probably going to fight at the school board meetings, but people are scared. They have seen what has happened to people that come out and speak. And people say, well, you guys do it. Well, we've done it, you know, for decades. It wasn't when I started, I was scared to death to give my opinion. I didn't want to be a talk show host. I didn't want to. People know the story. I didn't want to do it. And so I really didn't want to give my opinion because I was on the radio to be liked. And when you enter the arena of ideas, you are going to have people that love you and people that hate you, fairly or not. And I think now that I look back at it, I'm so happy because it gives you a lot thicker skin, doesn't it, Eric? It's like,
well,
whatever.
I mean, it also provides opportunity to be very vocal about where you stand and also connect with other individuals. You know, we have the great opportunity through our network of stations reaching out and being able to connect with listeners all over, not just the U.S., but all over the world at times. And so that's certainly refreshing and satisfying. Debbie makes the point that, you know, the liberal agenda inside the schools is to kind of tear away at the fabric. Part of the mission is to tear away at the fabric of the family. And I agree with that. But also it is to create what we call the permanent crisis. You know,
yes.
They want you to believe that there's racism everywhere you turn and you can't fix it. So they're going to be the heroes here by pointing it out and trying to do something about it along the way. Well, once you have a crisis, then you need to have a permanent crisis. And this goes back to the indoctrination of children, which, of course, they have been doing for many years. But through critical race theory, the further indoctrination to make something permanent in a massive crisis. And what greater crisis than that of a very racist society that cannot be fixed, although as liberals, they're going to keep trying as they put on their superhero costume and try and swoop in and be the saviors here. This is not anything new, but that's exactly what they want to do with critical race theory. Only the government can help you. And it's at every turn, of course, not just with what they tell you is racism everywhere, but it's also with, well, the big bad corporations, they're making all the money. We've got to go after them. Everything right now on the agenda for liberals and for the Democratic Party is about punishing. It's about punishing.
Right. And Debbie was on to something where she said, you know, this isn't about racism. It's about their Marxist belief, which is true.
Right.
Racism is a tool that they use to get there. And as we started talking about a long time ago on the show, the whole victim oppressor mentality. When you deal with identity politics, you create a group of people that have similar characteristics, whether they're physical or whatever, physical, sexual, whatever, and they are automatically the victims. And then you have to create the oppressors, and you create the victims and you create the oppressors. What critical race theory has done has taken it to the next level, which is the permanent oppressors. White people will always be racist. They will never be able to get rid of it. It is that ingrained into their culture. It's getting to the point right of, well, the culture was so dominant that it's almost in their DNA. They're not saying it's in the DNA, but the conclusion is the same. They can never get rid of it, and therefore you create a permanent victim class.
Right.
Which, again, you have then always. You always have a crisis. You always have a crisis. People will never get along, and government is there to take care of you. We said this with Colin Kaepernick early on when we said, look, this is a lot more than police brutality. This is him lying about police departments and systemic racism because his Marxist influences are coming forth, and the first goal of a Marxist is to tear down the institutions of a democracy. And that's what Kaepernick tried to do. That's what Black Lives Matter tried to do. And people finally put it together, you know, after the Cuba thing, when we started saying it, I got a couple emails saying, you guys were right on Kaepernick. It was the whole Marxist thing. It really is in line with what Black Lives Matter is doing. Duh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty obvious. And look, you know, we took flak, but the funny thing is, if you explain things simply, and it's very easy to do. We believe in one simple concept. We believe in what Martin Luther King said. And when you explain it that way, that you judge everybody by the content of their character and you judge them as individuals, not by skin color. And the people that come and say, well, you can't help judging them by skin color. No, you can't. You're the bigot. You're the one that's making that statement that people think like that. You think people think like that because that's how you think. You're the bigot. You're the racist. You don't judge people as individuals, and so you assume that others don't either. Well, sorry, you're wrong. I judge people as individuals. I don't give a damn about skin color. I don't care. Oh, that proves you care. No, that proves you're a bigot. Throw it right back in their face, and when you do it, you win, because the vast majority of the population deals with individuals each and every day, and they deal with individuals as individuals. The vast majority of us don't go around meeting our neighbors and thinking, oh, they're black, they must think this way. Oh, they're white, they must think this way. You judge them as individuals. This is really the disconnect. This is what gets you the win every time, because it's how people really deal with each other. And what they're trying to sell on the national political level is that we don't do that. And that goes against the grain of what we actually do in our real lives. Mm-hmm. So you can win this. You can win it, and you can win it easy. Because they're the ones that are the bigots. They're the ones that judge people by groups. They are the one that insist everybody treats people as groups. And that's because they do. It is simple projection.
Yep. Yeah, and you don't give up the fight.
And if they don't do that, then they're trying to sell Marxism.
Hmm.
If they truly don't judge people by groups, they're just trying to create the victim mentality, the victim oppressor mentality, therefore to help hopefully destroy institutions because they are avowed Marxist. It's one or the other. They're either racist or they're Marxist or they're both.
Hmm. Yep. I think right now it is interesting how it's coming to a head. And honestly, I think there is some satisfaction in knowing that it's happening as more and more parents step in front of indoctrination. Because it gets to the foundation of who we are, and it has a number of parents saying, this is enough. Drawing the line. Again, a group of parents who have voted Democrat, where they look at this for what it is. And it's indoctrination, but even worse than that, it's indoctrination of children and teaching them to judge by skin color. That's reprehensible. And these parents draw that line. And I think more and more you're going to see this on leftist agenda items. We bring you the polls. Where is this White House winning? Where is the far left winning on the polls of where people stand on the issues?
Oh, this means we have to mention Jim Garrity's piece in National Review from yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's a number of items there at the National Review that are worth mentioning and are pertinent. We'll try and get to some of those.
Including the one, The Olympics Are Stupid, that headline.
Great headline. The Olympics Are Stupid. And the headline above it, which is kind of a, it basically, let's see if I can find that again and go back to. Sometimes I just get stuck right there in the circle at National Review, just reading pretty much everything. Let's see here. I'll get to it here in just a minute. Here we are. Okay. Here's one headline. Jack Butler. In defense of seeking Olympic greatness. And then right below that, Kyle Smith. The Olympics are stupid. They have a section on the Olympics, basically. And there's a handful of stories there. But I just thought, okay. Two different takes. Very different takes. But it is, again, I think you look at those polls again over and over and over here recently. The far left is losing on the issues. And the difference here is that these are not politically distant issues, right? We go back to 2012, Romney running against Obama, running for his second term. On the issues, after the presidential debates, Romney was winning. But he didn't win. On the issues, landslide numbers. But the difference is
The exit polling that night.
Right.
That, yeah.
Yes. And the difference is that in part that those were politically distant issues. You talk about teaching children to judge by skin color. That's not distant at all. That's right there in the center of a home. And items like this, especially post-COVID, are not working. Agenda items like this are not working for the left.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Friday Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in to the show today, as always, we would love to hear from you. Coming up, just some of the well, it really got a lot of play yesterday. I thought on social media, the and other places. The polling that was done by ABC News that showed the drop in optimism in this country across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats dropped hugely.
Yeah.
In, you know, over 20 points. And the nation overall dropped 20 points the majority being optimistic to being pessimistic about where the country is going.
Mm-hmm.
We do believe part of it's critical race theory of it, because that just hit home. But there's a lot of other factors that we'll also get into. Plus, we'll tell you about the social justice group that tells wealthy white liberals, give up your spots at Ivy League schools. The COVID mandates, where are we going? I did like the Babylon Bee headline that said experts say because of the Delta variant, we must go back to what didn't work before.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
And we'll tell you about the Democrat mayors that hired private security after defunding police. This was a Forbes article that did that one.
Yeah.
And they all seem to be Democrat.
Hmm.
It's like dozens of them.
Hmm.
But it's Republicans who wanted to defund the police, I thought.
Right. That's what I was told by liberals.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Welcome. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream our show live, or you can get our app, put it on your phone. We podcast our show so you can listen when and where you want. Well, Biden yesterday, this was the moment that people are still trying to figure out. What did he actually say? As a reporter asked him a question on reconciliation.
Does immigration need to be in reconciliation? Must it be in reconciliation?
What must be what?
And we'll play it again just so you can hear it, because it's...
Does immigration need to be in reconciliation? Must it be in reconciliation?
What must be what?
It was just a bizarre moment, because it sounds like he's saying, my butt's been wiped. And you sit there and you just say, and we've talked about a number of things that he has done. Fox News, Brett Baer, last night covered it with Britt Hume. Some of the things that the president has said over the last week, and related it to, and said, look, with everything that's going on right now, you think about it, and the president is doing it more often now. Britt Hume saying it's senility. And he said people are concerned when you see the polling that shows that Americans don't think he's in control of the presidency.
Yeah.
If you're talking about where the direction of the country is going and whether you're pessimistic or optimistic and you see that huge change over the last couple of months, is that part of it? Here's part of that discussion back and forth.
You know, Britt, the president obviously receives some pretty good press overall from the media. But there have been a couple of answers recently at a town hall, also reporters question him where he's kind of snapped at them or said something where people weren't following it. Here's a couple of examples in recent days.
You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations. The question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are. Why can't the experts say we know that this virus is in fact it's going to be we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved but permanently approved.
Are there people who in the Democratic Party who want to defund the president?
Are there people in the Republican Party who think we're sucking the blood out of kids?
You know, it's just some answers that media didn't make a big deal out of them, but made you scratch your head.
Well, that second one you showed there, Brett, was pretty dramatic. And, the man obviously had lost his train of thought and couldn't recover it and stammered around for a little while. These are signs of senility, which is a common thing in elderly people. And Biden, like me, is certainly elderly. But I think it's becoming increasingly obvious that this is the case. And I can't believe that people who see that, who are not already committed to him in one way or another, or committed against him, don't look at that and find it alarming. That, at a time when their worries are increasing, and there's the polling showing that, the pessimism in the country is increasing, and they see the President of the United States losing his train of thought and unable to blurt out a coherent answer to a question. It's, I think people find it disturbing and makes them wonder about the future.
I think he's got a point there. I don't believe it's the only point. You know, as you and I were talking about Jim Garrity's column in the National Review, An American Summer Meltdown, and he talks about the fact that he said he just came back from vacation, and whoa, what a meltdown this is. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 increased 32% in 1 week. Mask mandates came back in a few cities. The U.S. Department of Justice decided not to invest Andrew Cuomo's policies for nursing homes. The Taliban is beheading Afghans who formerly served the U.S. military as interpreters. The Biden administration effectively surrendered on Nord Stream 2. Democratic pollsters are warning the party that fears of inflation are hitting Americans hard. Meanwhile, the president insists that the way to alleviate inflation is to pump a lot more money into the economy in the form of federal government spending. That when economists say, well, no, that's going to make the problem a lot worse. The administration is canceling border wall contracts, and the Cleveland Indians are now the painfully generic Cleveland Guardians. And then he writes, what is now clear is that the Biden era will feature a lot of focus on problems that Democrats think is convenient for their agenda. Climate change, the perennial complaint about our crumbling infrastructure, and the unvaccinated. This presidency will feature minimal attention on problems that the Democrats think are inconvenient for their agenda. Inflation, crime, the border, where the migrant surge at the border in some places is 288% higher than a year ago. The Taliban taking over Afghanistan and reverting to pre-9/11 status quo. The Russians hacking everything in sight. The Chinese hacking everything in sight, and American companies groveling before the whims of Beijing. But a problem you ignore is not a problem that is likely to solve itself. Because a president who was elected with a mandate to not just be to just not be like his predecessor is a president who wakes up every morning and cruises along on the vibe that his mission is already accomplished. Biden travels around the country and the world giving speeches declaring America is back and waits for the negotiators on Capitol Hill to work out the details of yet another massive spending bill. Biden insisted that the surge of migrants at the border was part of a regular seasonal pattern. It was not. Biden insisted that there's nobody suggesting that there's unchecked inflation on the way. No serious economist. You don't have to look that hard to find worried economists, in part because they thought prices would have stabilized by now, and a lot of them are Democrat economists. Biden insists that he trusts the capacity of the Afghan military, who is better trained, better equipped, and more competent in terms of conducting war. Afghan troops are deserting their posts and fleeing across the border to Pakistan. Says Biden turned 79 in 4 months. Today he'll be making remarks to commemorate the 31st anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act. That's a perfect fine thing to do, but it is not particularly connected to any of the pressing issues in the country right now. If the administration wants to argue that the pace of the president's schedule will naturally slow down in midsummer, fine. But if the Biden team is wondering why a majority of Americans are pessimistic about the coming year after being much more optimistic just 2 months ago, perhaps our fellow citizens are realizing that the White House's first response to a thorny issue is to insist that it doesn't exist. But hey, it's great weather for ice cream.
Yeah. What flavor are you having today, Joe? I mean, it's not going to get any better. On the agenda and on his mental acuity, show me where it's going to improve on either front.
It's not. Nothing.
It isn't.
Well, and you can see they're just ignoring the border as if it doesn't exist.
Well, you know what's, you know, you and I were talking about, speaking of the border, the vice president and basically what they should be doing with her. It should be a lot of basically parade waves, you know, photo ops, and really nothing more. Don't give her the border. They gave her the border. But even more so, in a situation like this, a younger vice president, and they're often younger, with the exception of George W. Bush and his vice president, they're often younger, and you can kind of, you know, you send them out to talk to the media. Well, she's not great talking to the media. So what do? I really don't have any answers here. I don't have any suggestions at all. You know what? Actually, what they're doing right now is probably the best you can do. Call a lid whenever you can and send him home every weekend. Politically, on the mental acuity thing, it's just getting worse. And it's happening every week. There is something you can point to. These aren't gaffes. This isn't him mispronouncing a name or just blanking out for a second. This is happening over and over and over again, and then you got to go over to the biggest part of it, and it's the issues. The agenda items are failing. The polls show that the American people are not with them on the agenda items.
You know, one of the things that will drop your polling in the direction of what people think very quickly is when they think a president is incompetent.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had that with Jimmy Carter.
Right.
You know, you can be the nicest person.
Sure.
And they may still, your favorability ratings may be great, but you can't win. You hurt your party drastically,
well,
as Jimmy Carter did.
You make a good point, right, because he was the everyday guy, peanut farmer.
Yeah.
And no mental acuity issues whatsoever.
Nope. But when they feel you're whatever the reason is, when they feel that you're incompetent or just ignoring the problems that are out there, you know, and we talked about, you know, Obama was able to get away with it. Obama was able to talk about climate change and race for the longest time. But eventually, when you have, you know, but you did have, you know, people in that administration, even though they talked about it a lot when it came to the, you know, Obama administration. They did have, I believe, more competent people in that administration, not a lot more, but more than the Biden administration, which has gone so radical. Because remember, the Obama administration was not as radical as the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it also happens that when the Biden, because remember, Biden didn't create critical race theory. This was out there already. Mm-hmm. This was out there before Biden became president. It was in the school districts before Biden became president. Now, Biden has embraced it, except for his momentary, you know, two steps forward, one step back last week on that one particular issue. But as we said, that doesn't cut it, really, because he backed the teachers union on teaching critical race theory.
Yeah.
So he didn't create the critical race theory problem that existed here over the last couple of months, because that was coming our way back last year, and we had talked about it. And he didn't create the identity politics of the – he was part of it as he when he was senator, when he was a senator, because, and even when he was a vice president, because critical race, not critical race theory, but identity politics existed, you know, his own bigotry and his own racist statements in the past and his friendship with former KKK members is well known. But the party was solidly behind that for the longest time when you talk about things like identity politics, which leads to critical race theory. It's the mm-hmm. same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You judge people as groups, not as individuals. So, but if you're viewed as incompetent, or people view you as incompetent and not really coherent, when you look at, you would have the Democrats say that Trump wasn't coherent. Now, Trump would say weird things. But when Trump talked about the issues of border, that was a coherent message that he put forth. Mm-hmm. When he was talking, remember when he kicked out Jim Acosta?
Mm-hmm.
What he was talking about, that was very coherent. That even the many in the middle would have said, okay, that's illegal immigrants, no. Legal immigrants, yes. That's something that solidly is in the middle, even though that was ignored. It was interesting. It was really ignored by the liberal media and the conservative media. Both ignored that statement when Trump made it. But if you look at the things that Trump actually backed, and we've said this before, very moderate positions, not always conservative positions.
Yep.
But very moderate positions where you actually looked at the substance of the issue and you asked Americans what they thought about the issue and kept Trump's name out of it, they liked it. Ask people what they think about critical race theory. Ask them what they think about what's going on with the border. Ask them what they think about crime. Ask them what they think about defunding the police. And as we've told you with some of the numbers just over the last couple of weeks, landslide numbers against what the president is doing, so they just pretend they don't exist. Inflation, people are worried about inflation, doesn't exist. In fact, we're going to make inflation worse and pretend to you that it's doing the opposite. Look, Obama could sell it at times. Obama was able to sell. You and I remember, was he down in Houston that one time
mm-hmm.
when he was campaigning?
Mm-hmm.
And he said Obama was able to sell it and say, wow, Democrats are really idiots. Our gas price is too high? Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a windfall profit tax and we're going to tax those oil companies. Yay. Which means your prices will go up.
Right.
You're cheering for higher prices. Obama was looking at Democrats and going, you loyal Democrats, you're a bunch of idiots. You want your gas prices lowered. I just told you I was going to increase them, and you're cheering.
Well, remember Gruber, one of the architects of Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
The stupid American voter.
And that was the stupid American Democrat.
Yes, because there wasn't one Republican nope. that was going to vote for it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Stocks closed up today. The Dow and the S&P both gained 0.25%, and the Nasdaq rose less than 0.1%. The Department of Veterans Affairs is requiring many of its frontline healthcare workers to get vaccinated. It's the first federal agency to do so. California and New York City also just announced they'll require their workers to get vaccinated or be tested at least once a week for COVID. China is cracking down on its tech giants, accusing them of malicious blocking of website links to competitors, infringing on users' rights, and mishandling user data. Shares of Chinese companies like Tencent and Alibaba fell. And Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman had a contentious meeting with China's vice foreign minister, who accused the U.S. of making China into an imaginary enemy. The State Department says Sherman raised concerns about human rights. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get to some of your calls and comments and more coming up following the bottom of the hour. And also, you know, I was mentioning that Jim Garrity column.
Yep.
And he talked about the fact that you hear the media talking about that the people who aren't getting vaccinated are Trump voters, he said, is an oversimplification. And he goes through all the major cities that are Democrat cities
yeah.
and how many people are not vaccinated.
Right.
He says they're conveniently not telling you this. And he goes through all the different statistics of all the different cities, which we will get to coming up following the bottom of the hour. Plus, Lori Lightfoot continues to defend her racist ways. The governor of Chicago keep digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And we'll have the story also about Democratic mayors that hired private security after defunding the police.
Yeah. Wow.
And more, too. A whole bunch of stuff. Also, it's a busy, busy day.
Here's your forecast.
We let you know yesterday about a tropical disturbance off the coast of Florida. That system is now moving onshore just north of the border between Georgia and Florida. Locally heavy rainfall remains possible through the day. That's where we'll find most of the thunderstorm activity and potential severe weather today. From Louisiana to Florida, Gulf moisture and daytime heating will be the primary driver of the thunderstorms there. The central and northern plains will be dry. We have some scattered showers for central Texas. Monsoonal flow from New Mexico and Arizona continue northward into Salt Lake City once again. For the most part today, we'll see sunny skies from the mid-Atlantic right on through the Great Plains and into the Pacific Northwest. Triple-digit temperatures remain for those areas that have been experiencing the excessive heat. On Monday, Tampa, Florida hit a high of 99 degrees, matching their all-time record. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil, you get out what you put in.
Bringing people together, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
We're uniters, not dividers.
That's right.
I'm sorry. I just was because we criticized that yesterday, that the whole thing of the people that still fall for that from politicians. That I'm going to unite the country.
Yeah.
The divisiveness has to end, and people still vote that way. I vote for people that'll bring the country together. Yeah, name the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one name.
Biden was going to be the guy.
Well,
before that, Obama was going to be the guy. Before that, Clinton was going to be the guy.
Okay, here we go. America's unvaccinated big cities, because the talk is it's only, Trump voters or Trump
right,
states.
Yeah.
Example, as of this weekend, 41% of New York City residents not vaccinated. Trump won 22% of the vote. Chicago, 43% of residents not vaccinated. Trump carried 24% of the vote. In the city of San Francisco, about 25% of residents are not vaccinated. Trump carried 12% of the vote. Los Angeles County, on just under 30% of residents not vaccinated. Trump won 26% of the vote. Really? That much? In LA? In Maricopa County, Arizona, you have 52% of residents not vaccinated. Trump won 48% of the vote. Harris County, which includes Houston, 48% are not vaccinated. Philadelphia, 37% of residents are not vaccinated. Multnomah County, which includes Portland, Oregon, just under 63% at least have one dose, meaning 37% are unvaccinated. Trump won 18% of that county. Milwaukee County, 61.6% of at least have one dose, meaning 38.4% are unvaccinated. Trump won 29% of that vote. Detroit has vaccinated just under 40% of its residents. Trump carried 5% of vote in that city. So there you go.
Yeah, it is, you know, when you look at the breakdown, and we've seen that, the liberal media wants you to believe it's only Trump supporters that aren't getting the vaccine. That's false. And it is, you know, that's been the narrative. And they were calling for him to, well, Trump needs to come out and endorse it. He got it. And when he was president, he helped the FDA fast track it to the market.
Yeah.
And it was the liberal left that was mocking it and discounting it all along the way.
Well, the bizarre thing they're trying to imply is that Trump is against his own vaccine.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why, because people follow him, you know, without question. Mm-hmm. They don't question anything that Trump does. And therefore, that's why they won't get the vaccine. Well, except for the fact that Trump has said, get the vaccine. Trump got the vaccine. Trump continually talks about how he was responsible for fast-tracking the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know extremely loyal Trump supporters who believe they believe every single thing he's ever said, except they won't get the vaccine.
Right.
And we call him Trump P1s. Mm-hmm. That he never does anything wrong except the vaccine. You can't get out of them. Why? But they just, mm-hmm. I find that very, very unique. I've got like three different friends.
Mm-hmm.
Complete, total Trump supporters. He has never told a lie, never done anything wrong. Vaccine, no! And there's anger in their voice. Mm-hmm. That anger doesn't come from Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this yesterday. The anger of people towards not getting, just if you don't want to get it, don't get it. It's like, but other people are trying. Well, you don't have to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you so angry? Don't be. I'm not, you know.
And the liberal media wants you to believe it's only Trump supporters, but you look in the major cities. And what do they do when they talk about the major cities and the people who haven't gotten vaccinated there? Well, it's because they don't have access.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Yeah, they do.
Right.
They absolutely do. They have chosen, for whatever reason, not to get the vaccine.
And then there are other people that I know that are Trump supporters and not Trump supporters that are Democrats that simply say, I'd rather wait a little bit longer before I get it. I have nothing against the vaccine, but I would just rather, see what the results are. And I ask, well, how long? I do know a couple of people that are starting to consider it because of the Delta variant that are considering getting it now, believing that enough time has taken place and enough people have gotten the vaccine. I have other people that say, no, because I heard or read a story that somebody still got COVID with the vaccine. Therefore, I'm not going to get it because it's not 100%. Well, it was never told to be 100%. It was never sold that way. And then their point of view is, well, if it's not 100%, I'm not going to get it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Did you get other vaccines? Yeah, they're not 100%. So, it's interesting because people, you know, we talk about sometimes in political parties, there's a set narrative that everybody goes and abides by, even if it's a lie. COVID has been unique where people have created their own narrative. It's an independent narrative, not even tied to their political party or their candidate that they absolutely support. I remember the one guy they walked into, and it was all Trump supporters, and they weren't getting the vaccine. They said, Trump got the vaccine. He goes, I don't care. He's from New York. I'm not. It's like, what? And this was a loyal Trump supporter. That was the reason. He's from New York. I think they went into Nebraska or something like that is where they went to, some rural town.
Hmm.
So people are different. People are unique.
Well, you know, I think ultimately, I'm looking at a map here at the New York Times, how vaccinations are going basically county by county. And you can click on it for the percentage as to how many people overall, how many people over 65 in any given county are vaccinated. And you look at it, and in these highly populated counties, you would think that it would be higher because people are living closer together.
Yeah.
You know, you get out into West Texas, and while they do have apartments out there, things are a little more spread out than they are in Dallas County, Texas.
A tad.
Yeah. So you would think that the percentage in those major cities would be much higher because of the nature of the virus and how closely people live and interact with each other. You know, you live out in West Texas, you're going to have fewer people that you interact with on a day-to-day basis. Sheer numbers game. And it's just interesting to see that in many of these major metro, highly populated counties and areas, that the percentage isn't higher. I wonder how many people just don't buy it. I mean, in other words, they don't. They look at the numbers on the vaccine or on COVID itself, and they say, okay, if you look at the very small percentage of people who have died, as opposed to people who have gotten the virus, then it's a numbers game, and I'll live with that risk. And if they don't have any underlying conditions, and they're, you know, which includes age, they're not going to be heavily motivated. And if they've gotten the virus, many people, okay, I've got the immunity. I've got the antibodies, and I'm not going to worry about it.
And even if you get it, because, you know, one of the things they talk about is if you're vaccinated, you'll still get it. Yeah, but are the symptoms, are there bad symptoms? Mm-hmm. Or is there just a virus that exists and it is defeated very quickly because of the antibodies that you have already? Mm-hmm. And therefore, you're listed as getting COVID, so the numbers go way up. But the fact is the hospitalizations and the deaths are a temporary blip. Mm-hmm. That will then go away as more people are actually...
Well, we're seeing this in the UK. In fact, in the UK, the Delta variant cases are dropping.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's a positive. Now, the policymakers there are still saying, well, even though they're dropping, we're not going to change anything. Okay. All right. But eventually they will. It's not the same. I don't believe it's the same as it is here in the U.S. We value our freedom more here in the U.S., no doubt. And I think that when you start seeing those cases drop, because if the Delta variant is much more contagious and the hospitalizations right now, they tell us 99% of the hospitalizations are of people who are not vaccinated. And hopefully those individuals survive, but eventually you will get to a greater immunity naturally. I don't know when that's going to be, but eventually you do get there, because when you survive it, it means your body was able to fight it. And through medicine, if you were hospitalized or treatment, whatever treatment there might be, then you were able to fight it and your body is learning to fight it. And if that indeed is the case, then makes me wonder how quick the drop, I guess, might be.
You know, when you see it, I mean, it all depends how you think. Because, for example, every year I didn't get the flu vaccine, for a while,
mm-hmm.
and every year I get it now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting older, so I get it. I got, the pneumonia shot. Mm-hmm. I get the pneumonia shot. I got the shingles vaccine. Got all three last year, and last couple of years I've got probably the last 5 years I've got the flu and the, pneumonia shot, whatever. We went through the numbers that the flu can kill every year, up to 100,000 people, but they're not sure. The CDC isn't sure, but we went through all the numbers. And so if you look at what's going on right now with the Delta variant, which in all likelihood is not going to at all get to the peak of where we were before, because you have roughly, you're not going to have the deaths because you have so many elderly, 90% that have at least gotten the first shot. So it's not going to have that effect. And we said if we start doing travel bans and doing everything again as they're doing, well, then we might as well do it during the flu, too. But less than half of people get the flu shot every year.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to, they want to get to 70% every year. They never really do. 2018, 2019, which was a particular bad flu season, 49.2% of people got the vaccine. That was the highest in 10 years, but well below the 70% target. Among adults, only 45.3% of people got vaccines for the flu. I don't know what it is for pneumonia. You know, and people say, well, you can still get it. Yeah, I know. My mom died of influenza and pneumonia, and she had both shots and was getting both shots for years. Yeah, it happens. It's not a guarantee. So there are people like me and probably you that say, yeah, you know, there's a slight chance, so I might as well get it. I had the flu. I only had the bad flu once, and I thought I was going to die. This is in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was that bad. It was horrible. I couldn't believe that was the flu when I got diagnosed with it because it was so bad. That's the only time I've ever gotten the flu. I mean, that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I probably have, you know, sick to my stomach, whatever. Nothing like I got that first time. That was horrible. And then it went into a little bit of walking pneumonia, and I could feel that in my lungs. Like a year later, I could still feel it. Mm-hmm. We could still breathe, and you could feel that very tiny thing that I could still do and do all my athletics and everything else. But you could just tell that it had damaged or done something to part of the lung.
Mm-hmm.
Completely recovered, but
right.
So don't want to do that again. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So you have a lot of these cities coming out in state of New York City, for example, that certain city employees must get it. And I think that's what you're going to see from the Democrats, is they're going to start with government employees first.
Right,
it's going to be interesting to see what the blowback is on that from a significant portion of people that are actually Democrats.
Mm. Yeah. And how obviously everything is a test, right? How far can we push this? And for especially like, for presidents, the liberal administrations always kind of push these mandates for federal employees. And then that's part of testing the waters. Let's see how many mayors, how many cities, liberal cities are going to push this for their employees and what the pushback will be from people who supported them.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.